Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. A little later on the show, Don Hutchinson and Stevie Nicol will be with us. But we'll kick things off in La Liga. And for Barcelona fans, they just seem to go from one crisis to another. This, of course, their worst start to a season in 29 years. The front page of Mundo Deportivo summing up quite nicely. Emergent Thea, because of the injuries to Sergio Roberto and Gerard Piqué, they are out for a long time as we welcome in Sid Lowe to the show. Sid, this isn't just us blowing this up. This is real, real problems, isn't it, for Barcelona at the moment?
Yeah, absolutely it is. I mean, the one thing I should probably throw in at the very start is to say that the last time Barcelona had a start this bad, they did actually go on and win the league. But I suspect that's not going to happen now. They're already 9 points behind Atletico Madrid. Their results have been poor. Their performances haven't been convincing. And as you say, the injury in particular to Gerard Piqué, obviously it matters to lose Sergio Roberto for a couple of months. But the possibility that maybe Piqué will not play again this season is a real crisis for them. They don't really have central defenders available. Piqué is so important to the way that they play on top of everything else. And I think you're right. It's not just us overplaying this. It's not people getting massively overexcited. This is a proper, fully blown crisis. And it's a fully blown crisis at every level, because this isn't just about the sporting side of things, as we know. It's about the institutional side of things. It's about the economics of the club. And there will be presidential elections in January, but whoever comes in is going to have an enormous mess to sort out. And to be honest, a mess that can't be sorted out, not in the short term anyway.
Yeah, that's it as well. Short term, you look at it, never mind winning La Liga. This is the Barcelona side you could genuinely discuss whether or not they're going to make the top four.
I think that's entirely legitimate. I completely agree with you. I mean, look, on the face of it, that's a knee-jerk reaction. But if you look at the top four places in La Liga, well, you would say Atletico Madrid, Real Madrid, Real Sociedad, Villarreal, all of those are convincing more than Barcelona at the moment. Now, of course, the season's very long and there's a lot of games to be played, a lot of points still to be won. But if this Barcelona side is in a position at the moment of implosion, of disintegration, if on top of the problems they already had, which were already very significant, they start to lose key players, they've already lost Ansu Fati, they now lost Gerard Piqué and Sergio Roberto, then yeah, there's a very strong possibility that if things get worse, they don't hit that absolutely minimum requirement, which would be qualification for next year's Champions League.
With everything going on, focus continues to be on Lionel Messi, nowhere near his best. What's going on?
Well, look, I think what's going on with Lionel Messi, I mean, there's a number of elements to this. One of them, of course, is his age. This was likely to happen at some point. I'm not necessarily saying with that, by the way, that I think he's reached the end, but I think it does mean that recovery time has probably become longer and he's just come back from international duty, a 15-hour flight back home. We know that he's played more games than he should have done. He's not travelling with the team to the Champions League game because he needs a rest, according to Koeman. Then, of course, there's the structure around him, which doesn't convince at the moment, which doesn't really seem to be helping him, even though in part, at least, it's supposed to be built for that very reason, to facilitate his play, because he's so important to the way that the then team plays around him. I think there's also, of course, an emotional element to this, and it's impossible for us to judge that with any kind of precision, but we know that this is a player who didn't want to be here. And I think at times, however competitive you are, however serious you are about your football, there are moments in which that will impact upon the way that you play. Now, that's not to say you're going to go out every game and not care. And I don't believe for a minute that Leo Messi is downing tools. But I do think there's a subconscious element to that, not of downing tools, but of not being either kind of fully engaged with it mentally or emotionally, of maybe not having that ability to kind of take you through the bad moments in games. I also, as I say, I think there's a structural element, which is I think he's getting crowded out much more. And the long and short of this is that there's a very significant problem and Messi is part of that.
Meanwhile, Sid, Real Madrid are favourites to win La Liga, to retain their title. Should be Atletico Madrid, shouldn't it?
Well, maybe it should. Atletico Madrid, of course, are trying to avoid this kind of narrative, this kind of discourse, which, by the way, the whole of the Spanish media is trying to pin on them. And it was quite interesting watching the response to the game on Saturday night, watching the way that the media reacted over Saturday night and throughout Sunday. This kind of attempt to make Atletico Madrid embrace the idea that they're not just candidates but favourites for the title. And there was almost a kind of accusatory tone to all of this, and saying, well, why won't you accept this? Why won't you say, yes, we're favourites? As if any manager ever says, oh yeah, by the way, we're going to win this competition. As if Simeone, of all people, is going to embrace that. But one person who did let their guard slip ever so slightly was Koke, who after the game on Saturday night said, well, why not dream?
Yeah, why not indeed? They certainly look the best team in Spain at the moment. Especially when you see a Real Madrid 1-1 draw against Villarreal. You could argue very much lucky to get a point in that game. And for them, of course, it's Inter Milan next. And normally you think fourth round of the group stages of the Champions League, you know, normally it's all kind of wrapped up almost by now. Not in this case, not in the way this group has played out. And of course, significantly, Real Madrid will be going into this tie without Sergio Ramos and without Karim Benzema, Sid.
Yeah, the Benzema news has only just been confirmed. He's been training on his own for the last few days, and we weren't sure whether he was going to make it. It now looks like he won't. And as you say, this is a game that's really big for reasons we didn't anticipate. You know, the fourth great game of the group between Inter Milan and Real Madrid should have been huge in terms of who finished first. Mm-hmm. As it turns out, it's huge in terms of who may not get through. And it's possible that neither of them get through. But I think if one of them loses this game, they'll be in a very, very difficult position indeed. Now, look, the group is tight enough that anything can happen, including the outside possibility that both of them get through, but it's not very likely. You've got 5 points, 4 points, 4 points, and 2 points across the group. But it's true that these are two teams that are on edge, and have been on edge all the way through this competition, by the way. I mean, look at Inter Milan, who got a last-minute equaliser in the first game against Borussia Mönchengladbach. Look at Real Madrid, who needed two very late goals to draw in Germany, needed a relatively late goal against Inter Milan at a time when Inter Milan were dominating the game to win the third game. And so they've been rescued twice already and still aren't safe. And this is a game where both teams are very much on edge.
Sid, am I wrong in thinking that, like, the 20 years that you have been covering Real Madrid and in La Liga, any other season, a manager doesn't qualify for the group stages, if you're a Real Madrid coach, you're out? Not necessarily the case this time round.
I honestly don't know what to say in response to that, Dan, to be honest with you, because you know, Real Madrid have never been knocked out of the group stage of the Champions League. I feel like if that was to happen, Zidane would be under a huge amount of pressure. We've said before that he's been under pressure all the way through this season, and he just always is. And yet there's a bit of me that thinks there's enough credit there that means he would get away with it. But I must confess, I'm not 100% sure if he would. I think maybe it depends on the way it plays out. Maybe it depends on the way the rest of the season plays out. My feeling is that if they didn't get through the group, then Real Madrid would probably take a decision, which is to start looking at managers for the future, but maybe not necessarily sack him immediately. But I must confess, as I say, I don't know how Real Madrid would react to something like this. I think it would be emotionally an enormous, enormous disaster from Real Madrid's point of view.
So did you subtly kick the dog when she was whining then?
I subtly tried to just nudge her out of the way. Yes.
Can Stella come up? Let us say hello before we let you go. This will be the most exciting thing we'll do all show, I'm sure. Where is she?
Come here.
Come on, Stella.
Stop whining, Stella.
Oh, fantastic. She stuck her tongue out as
poor
well.
Poor Stella. I think she's hungry.
Sid Lowe, thank you very much. Stella, without a doubt, the best moment of the show this day, this week, probably this year. We'll drop down now to the level to remind you that the Gavin Jules podcast dropped today. Be sure to check that out over on the website.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Couple of games in the Premier League today. Burnley registering their first win of the season with a 1-0 victory against Crystal Palace. Meanwhile, Southampton and Wolves played out a 1-1 draw. Of course, after this weekend's results, it's Spurs and Liverpool at the top of the table. Stevie Nicol and Don Hutchinson are here to discuss the title race. Don, on yesterday's show, Stevie said Spurs have no chance of winning the title this year.
Ah, don't start. I never said that at all.
I don't believe you, Dan. Surely, Stevie, you wouldn't come out with that. Surely that's a stitch-up.
Stevie, somewhat poo-pooed Spurs' chances because of Jose Mourinho's tactics and say they need to improve if they're going to win the league.
I don't see Jose doing that, though, Dan. I think that's why he's been brought in. I looked at the stats at the start of the season when they were banging in threes and twos and were really exciting. And then Jose put the squeeze on that. And then all of a sudden, from about four games ago, their stats went really low. Touches in the opposition box, shots on target, shots off target. But guess what? They're winning games for fun. They're winning them easy. They're scrappy. They're not amazing. But Jose's been brought in to not be Pochettino and not get close and not look like a fantastic side, but losing games. Jose didn't want to rock up and play Man City. And everyone's saying that's the best game of football we've seen all season. Man City won 4-3. All Jose's bothered about is the 3 points.
Don, are they going to be there or thereabouts at the end of the season?
I think they will. I mean, it's very early, but Man City look absolutely way off. They're 8 points behind. Granted, they've got a game in hand and they've got good fixtures, but Man City don't convince me whatsoever. I think they need a striker badly. They've got no confidence. They play good football. They knock it around well. They were good against Liverpool, but defensively, they've always got a mistake in them. So, even this early on, City, you've got too much to do, given Liverpool an 8-point head start. And you're looking at the top four as it is, and I think they are the contenders.
Spurs to finish higher than City. You buying that, Stevie?
Ooh, I tell you what, if you'd asked me a couple of weeks ago, I would have said no. But I think that could be the case. Wow. Yeah, you kind of... I've been expecting City to bludgeon somebody over the last couple of weeks, and it hasn't come. And it doesn't look like coming. You know, as Don said, Jesus is good, but he's not good enough to carry City to the Premier League title. They don't look like scoring. Yes, they've got mistakes in them at the back. And they play lovely football. But you've got to win games to win titles. And right now, they can't win a game to save their life.
Don, when we were talking about possibilities of what to discuss today, you wanted to bring up Edison.
Yeah, what's happened to Edison? Is this Edison's brother that we're seeing? Because this guy came into the Premier League and he was amazing. I thought, this is the best goalkeeper in the world. He was ranking, I think, in everyone's top five at least. Now you're looking at him and he's making so many mistakes. And, you know, brilliant on the ball. Can set up attacks from, you know, when he's got that ball at his left foot, he can ping balls 50, 60, 70 yards. But I'm seeing an Edison at the moment, Dan, that seems to be rushing off his line. If he stays on his line... And listen, I'm no goalkeeping expert, but you look at his performances of late and he's desperate to try and make a save. He might be desperate looking at the back four and the lack of protection in front of him where he feels as though he's got to do something, he's got to make a save. But I dare say if Edison stays on his line, Spurs don't score them two goals.
That fair, Stevie? Should have stayed put?
Absolutely, on both of them. Yeah, I mean, he's putting himself in positions where he can't make a save. You know, as a goalkeeper, you either come the whole way or you stay. And if you're going to come, then you have to get there. And he's basically got himself and these two goals in no man's land because he hasn't got close enough to either Son or Celso to give them nothing to shoot at. But he's also too close that if there's any sort of pace on the ball, he doesn't have time to react and make a save. So he's actually got himself in no man's land in these both goals. And listen, if he gets himself in the right spot on two of them, I'm with Don. I think it's going to be hard to beat him. So, yeah, you could point the finger at Edison as well.
Spurs obviously level at the top of the table with Liverpool. Jurgen Klopp, you'd imagine, would have been full of happiness after yesterday's amazing win against Leicester. As much as he was impressed with their performance, he once again used his platform after the game to bring up the facts that the fixtures are congested, citing the fact that they've got to play Brighton in the early game on Saturday after playing a Champions League game on Wednesday. Listing the injuries and the problems and the need for more substitutions. Stevie, overall, do you empathise with Klopp?
Well, yes, I empathise the fact that they've got so many injuries. And yes, this is the best time to, if you've got a grievance like that, this is the best time after you've won, because then people can't turn around and say it's sour grapes or any of that nonsense. So I think the timing of it's right. The problem is, if he's going to argue, he has to argue about having another day's rest. You can't argue about having 3 or 4 hours more rest. That doesn't make any sense. And actually, it should be the clubs that are doing the arguing and not the managers. There are so many people involved, and if there was to make any changes, that it wouldn't be ideal for anybody other than the one person that it suited. You know, the managers want more time, but that's ideal for them. The TV companies want to play the games when they want because that's best for them. So it's ideal for them, but not anybody else. I mean, it's just never going to change. And by the way, this is nothing new. Let me tell you, 35 years ago, I'll give you a great example. 35 years ago, we were playing a Saturday, travel up to Scotland on a Sunday. On the Monday, with the Scottish national team, we would travel in Europe somewhere. We'd train Tuesday, play Wednesday, travel straight back Wednesday night, get back at silly o'clock Thursday morning, travel back down to Liverpool on the Thursday, get on the bus on Friday and travel to London or Southampton or Norwich and then play a game on the Saturday. So there's 3 games in 7 days with 4 of those days travelling. That's 35 years ago. And for 35 years, everybody's been saying the same thing and complaining about too many games. It's never going to change. But if you're going to argue over something that should have happened. And in my opinion, what should have happened is the international fixtures should have been scrapped. Sending players around the world in the middle of a worldwide pandemic is absolute madness.
Don, Klopp taking on the broadcasters, this early kickoff time. Not only Klopp, we've heard other managers complain about it as well, but it's the richest league in the world because of the TV companies and because of the money that they have pumped in. It's difficult, isn't it, really, if you're in that situation, to feel too much sympathy for Klopp and others?
It's hard, Dan, it's hard, because I don't think anyone's got the solution. I mean, I heard a story about Almiron in Newcastle, who travelled and played in Paraguay's first game, and he wasn't eligible or fit enough to play in their second game, but they still made him travel with the squad. So therefore, he got back, I think, Friday morning and wasn't ready enough to play for Newcastle. That's one example. The contradiction to that is Ross Barkley got injured for Aston Villa, who didn't travel on international duty. So it wasn't as though he was tired and he was labouring. But I think the number at the moment, Dan, is close to 100 players that's out injured. And I understand exactly what Jurgen Klopp's saying. And I think he was trying to stress the fact as well that he wasn't just talking about Liverpool players. He was talking about, I think, Saka at Arsenal picked up a knee injury. And he was looking around the rest of the teams in the Premier League thinking, there's too many injuries. And you can't really argue with what he's saying and exactly what Stevie's saying. There's always been a backlog of fixtures, and it's always been tough when you're playing 3 games a week. I've done that myself. It's hard, but you've got to be durable. You've got to get on with it. The trouble is where do you try and give the players a rest? I think, like Stevie, the Nations League and the friendlies, they didn't need to be played this early. Not early on when the players hadn't had a month or two off in the summer. Some players got 8 or 9, 10 days maximum off in the summer, straight back into no pre-season whatsoever, playing Premier League games, and all of a sudden Nations League and international friendlies come. So at some point, something's got to give, and it has to be not the Premier League, not domestic leagues around Europe, it has to be the internationals that I think people need to look at and say, well, how can we try and protect our players? If we need to try and move the Euros on a couple of weeks next summer, then so be it. But try and find a time to try and give the Premier League players, while they're playing domestic football and Champions League football, some kind of break.
Away from that, boys, I just wanted to discuss one of the big refereeing decisions that we saw this weekend. Referees and VAR in particular, they've been reluctant, haven't they, to change those kind of close calls. But we saw in the Villa game, I think arguably this is a very close one. The referee, though, changing his mind, Stevie. Was he right to?
Yeah, and I don't think it's a close one at all, actually. The challenge from Solimarch on Trezeguet, at first glance, looks as though he's caught him. But fortunately, that's why we have VAR. And when you see it, he clearly gets plenty of the ball And it's still arguable whether he catches Trezeguet. Probably just about. But the fact is, he got the ball first, and that means it's no penalty. So, absolutely spot on. But that wasn't the worst one. Come on, the Man United one was the worst.
Don?
I agree with Stevie. Sometimes, Dan, you look at a decision and you think, well, it's not clear and obvious. It's a difficult one. I was leaning on the side, I must admit, if it'd been a penalty. I thought Solly Mark made contact, and I thought it was sufficient evidence to give a penalty. So I think that one there is quite subjective. I think that's probably a 60-40, a 50-50.
So you don't agree with Stevie, Don?
The United one.
You think it's a penalty?
I did. I thought it was a penalty. I thought Solly March.
How can it be a penalty, Don? If he gets the ball first, and then he catches the player, how can it be a penalty? If he gets the ball first, he's going one way. The opponent is equally going towards him, so why should he be punished because there's contact?
That's not a guaranteed law anymore, Steve. If you catch the ball and take the ball but get some of the man, you can still foul someone. Gone are the days where you take the ball and people say, well, I got the ball. I heard Bruno Fernandes say at the weekend, and he was very honest when he got interviewed. Bruno Fernandes said, in my opinion, this is what he was saying, but in my opinion, my perception was that I got a piece of the ball and I caught the man after. That's still a penalty. You can still take some of the ball and foul a player.
Yeah, but surely you agree with the rationale, though. You know, you got one player going that way, you've got another player coming this way, both are doing the same speed, but Solly Mark's the defender, gets a touch on the ball first. So, if I'm the referee, surely that rationale tells me it's not a penalty kick.
No, I think it's one of them, Stevie. I think if you take enough of the ball, I think there's always going to be a time where there's going to be a collision, there's going to be an aftermath. And I think you judge it and how you see it and you go, well, Bruno Fernandes was shin on shin and he got a minuscule bit of the ball. So therefore, that's a penalty. The Solly March one, I agree. It's a difficult one. I thought he got a little bit of the ball, but I thought there was more of the man than there was the ball.
Thank you very much, boys. More from Don and Stevie to come on Extra Time today. Be sure to check that out over on our YouTube channel. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Well, it will be Sporting KC against Minnesota United in the conference semi-final. It'll be fascinating to see how that one plays out. Meanwhile, FC Dallas await the winners of Seattle and LAFC, who play tomorrow. Casey Keller with us now. I tell you what, Casey, MLS playoffs seem to always deliver just on the bonkers level, completely off the scale.
Yeah, for me, it always kind of comes down to you have a bunch of games throughout the season that don't really have implications per the specific matches. And so then once you get into a knockout situation, just lunacy just prevails. And you have late goals once the pressure comes on, and then you think a team is has seen it out, and then they concede an even later goal, and then penalties come into play. So, yes, wild, wild weekend for MLS.
In which goalkeepers dominated quite a lot, Casey. Tim Melier, of course, the star of the show for Sporting KC. Once Wando forces it to, you thought, well, there's only going to be one winner from this. But in the end, Melier is the star.
Yeah, you would have really thought that the momentum would have been, you know, completely with San Jose fighting back. You know, Wando has the great chance to take the lead, And then Kansas City goes straight back down and gets the goal from Bucios. And then you just think, okay, they're just going to see it out. But then, you know, Wando gets unmarked, you know, what was it, 7 minutes into stoppage time, gets the equalizer. You thought, okay, that's it, that Kansas City would just be so deflated. And then Tim Melia steps up, saves three penalties, and KC goes through. So fantastic with that. And then we get to look at the Orlando situation.
I thought you'd want to bring that up, KC. I tell you, you see such a difference, obviously, from a goalkeeper and an outfield player going in goal.
Yeah, Schlegel, hey, give him credit, man.
Oh, God, he's the hero, of course.
When he needed it after. Oh, of course, but you think of just the lunacy again. Yep. I mean, that came with, that whole penalty kick shootout with, you know, Gaisi getting the second yellow card, and then can Rowe come in? No, he can't come in. But then, Schlegel comes in as the field player, completely looks like a field player, but is able to, you know, come up with the save. But then somehow they forgot that Orlando still needed to score another goal to actually get the win. So, yes, complete craziness, but completely entertaining as well.
Casey Keller, as always, thank you very much. Well, the playoffs, of course, continue tomorrow. Some massive games. Toronto FC taking on Nashville. That's at 6 p.m. Eastern. Then that doubleheader on ESPN. Philadelphia Union against the New England Revolution, followed by Casey Seattle Sounders against LAFC.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
The rare scenario this weekend then in Germany. Bayern Munich dropping points. A 1-1 draw at home against Werder Bremen means their lead cut to one at the top of the table. Borussia Dortmund in second, Bayer Leverkusen third after their respective victories. It's Monday, so Casey Keller and Steve Cherundolo are with us to reflect on what we saw in the Bundesliga. Steve, a little bit of vulnerability from the defending champions?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's maybe a little fatigue setting in as well. This fixture date we're riding between Champions League week and a national break. And I do think this year, looking towards the title race, it's great to have a few more teams involved because it's really Bayern's title for the taking, as it has been for the last 8 years. And so any more competition they can get should make this more interesting.
A lot of eyes on U.S. international Josh Sargent in this game, Casey. I thought he gave himself a lot of credit.
Yeah, very much so. I think particularly in the first half, he had a great opportunity where Neuer made a fantastic save, but then really quick to react off of the throw-in, setting up the goal, and Werder Bremen were really, in that first half, by far the better side than Bayern. Okay, Bayern had a response in the second half, but it's excellent for Josh because there was so much talk about potential. And at some stage, you know, potential has to transform into progressiveness and getting yourself out there and getting goals and assists. And we're seeing that transformation from Josh this season in particular. And so it's great to see, and hopefully he just continues that as Werder Bremen barely survived last season and this year look much better.
Steve, how would you assess Josh Sargent's performance?
You know, I think he's growing, and I think we're seeing, you know, a forward who's definitely going to have a long future, not only at Werder Bremen, but also for the U.S. men's national team. Yeah, you know, in the early stages of his career, he obviously relied a lot upon his athleticism, his ability to run and jump and to compete. But now you're starting to see his soccer IQ coming out. He's learning from his experiences. He's learning playing against, at a very high level, playing against good center backs week in and week out. Especially this, you know, this goal that he helped set up. He used his body well against Javi Martinez, who's an extremely experienced player who's won everything on this planet there is to win. And you know, that part of his game is shining now, and he's becoming a real key player for this team in holding balls up and making some key passes. You know, for me, the next step for him to be would be to find his way inside the box, because that's where goals are scored, mm-hmm. and that's where he needs to be, and he needs to start camping out in the box and be a little more, you know, be just a little more greedy, if you will.
Steve, what's the hype been like around Erling Haaland this weekend? Of course, getting four goals, the first person to do that since Aubameyang 4 years ago.
Yeah, he's so exciting. He's fantastic to watch. But, you know, for me as a coach, from my standpoint, he gives you so much more than that. He works hard against the ball. He creates his own chances. He doesn't need very many chances to score. He knows where to be in the box. He is a game changer. And he is the future. He is going to be, in my opinion, the best number nine in the world. As soon as Roman Lewandowski starts to slow down a bit and loses a step, he is the future of the center forwards.
Casey, from the sublime to the ridiculous, let's talk about the Bayer Leverkusen goalkeeper, shall we? And that howler at the weekend from Radetzky. How do you explain this?
You don't really. You just kind of say, you just chalk it up. I think every goalkeeper is going to have one or two of those in a long, if they have a long career, and this was his. And I think the one thing that you, as a goalkeeper, love to be able to say is, I made this mistake, but it didn't cost us. Yes. We still got the 3 points. I can laugh about it. I can hold my head in shame. I can do all those things. He was joking about that this was going to be a YouTube sensation. He knew that was going to happen. You have to hold your hand up. But when you pick up the 3 points and you look at the way that this weekend went, with Bayern dropping points, with Leipzig dropping points, Dortmund having you know, that first half where it really looked like they would possibly drop points. And Leverkusen have been right there, obviously disappointed with last season. Their poor run at the end of the season knocked them out of Champions League. So with them having a big win today after the goalkeeping mistake, they're right there in the mix as well. So yes, big mistake. Goalkeepers have to hold their hand up. They have to say, look, yep, that's mine on that time. But when the team picks you up and gets all 3 points for you, those are much better mistakes to have.
Steve, how do you deal with those sort of mistakes as a defender when your goalkeeper does that to you?
It's tough, but this is part of this game. You learn to kind of roll with the punches. You know, those, unfortunately, they hurt, but you know, if you get behind everybody in the team, it's definitely something you can overcome. And I think that's the best thing about this mistake is that his team won. Purely because of the banter during in the locker room this week is going to be off the charts. So it's fantastic for him and his teammates that they did come away with a positive result, because it's very easy to laugh it off. But when it does cost you something, cost you 3 points, or even possibly something greater, you know, the getting knocked out of a tournament or another competition, you know, those sting. But it's part of the game. It happens in the training pitch periodically as well. It's just something you have to be professional about and move on.
Casey, as you're here, just away from the Bundesliga and speaking of goalkeeping errors, one that did cost them, Barcelona losing 1-0 to Atletico Madrid this weekend because of Ter Stegen's error here. What's he up to?
Well, that's a good question, because it is a case where there's this idea that goalkeepers now not only need to be goalkeepers, but they also have to be defenders as well. And so you're going to deal with this. If you want your goalkeeper to be more proactive, coming outside of his line and trying to be a sweeper as well as a goalkeeper, then you have to accept that these problems are going to happen, because you're not going to get your timing right every time you're 25 yards outside your box. So if that's the way you want your goalkeeper to play, you have to accept that there's going to be mistakes along with that. And Ter Stegen has been phenomenal for Barcelona for years now. So I think he's allowed the odd mistake. But at times, I really don't think that's the right position for a goalkeeper. But you know, that's the way they want the modern goalkeeper to play.
Thank you, Casey. Thank you, Steve. Just a reminder, Monday means that Marcotti's musings available for you to peruse over on the website.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Live soccer for you tomorrow on ESPN Plus. Bournemouth taking on Nottingham Forest in the Championship. That game live at 3 p.m. Eastern. Well, that's it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to everyone who has been on, in particular, of course, Stella the dog. Be sure to stay tuned. Extra Time is next. Don and Stevie answering your questions. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. What are you doing, neck exercises, Don? You're not going out to play.
Preparing for some of these questions. I'm just sort of doing some mental push-ups.
All right, get yourself ready. Meanwhile, Stevie, I feel like a new photo has appeared behind you. Is that you getting married? Is that your wedding day?
Yeah, that was the way. She told me the other day, she went, I snuck that in to see if Dan would notice.
Oh, there you go.
It's not...
wonky, though. Yeah. She's got it wonky.
Grab it for us, Stevie. Bring it up close. Let's have a look.
She's got it wonky.
You having a laugh?
No, I want to see it. I want to see... You want to what you glory? Are you in a kilt?
I am. That was us getting out the Rolls Royce, and that's my niece.
Oh, Lindsay. Look at that.
That was after we got married, yeah.
Was there anything underneath the kilt, Stephen?
What clan you wearing there, Stevie?
Of course there was. I think I'm stupid.
Go to, yes.
What clan you wearing there? He doesn't know, does he?
He's got no idea. I wore the one she got me. She went, right, this is the kilt we're wearing. I went,
right.
Roger.
Okay.
What clan is it? Green one. That'll do.
Let's get on to the serious business, Stephen. You've upset a lot of people over the last 24 hours. This is one of the many, many responses we got. Stevie, why do you hate Mourinho? Is it because you never reached anywhere close to his level when you were a manager? The man won everything in Europe's biggest leagues. Respect.
Oh, yes. That's why. That's why I don't hate Mourinho. Mourinho is, you know, the best question we were asked yesterday was about, you know, was he a dinosaur the way he played and all this part? Well, the truth is, because of the pandemic, the way things are turning out now, with all the teams struggling for all kinds of different reasons, the way he's playing is working. That's the difference. If all things being equal and it was just a normal season, do you really think that they would be sitting top of the league? Because I don't. Not playing the way they do.
We almost got a compliment. Almost got a compliment from it, Don. It turned on its head. That was it.
Nearly.
I'm very much into, listen, you have to do what you got to do to win a game. And that's what Spurs are doing. But don't try and sell me this Mourinho tactical masterclass. I mean, come on.
I tell you what,
if you're
Stevie,
a coach and you can't stick 10 men behind a ball, then I'm sorry, there's something wrong with you. The fact is, they've got players going forward who have got pace, who have got ability, who can score goals, who are exciting when they're attacking. Unfortunately, they're winning games, yes, but we maybe see it 3 or 4 times a game. That's not what we want to watch, is it?
Stevie, I was at the Brighton game, and Brighton absolutely bopped them off the pitch. Brighton absolutely battered Tottenham, just couldn't score. And you're watching the game thinking, how are these contenders? How are these going to be contenders to win the league? And then they play West Brom and score a goal in the last minute, and you're thinking, Jose Mourinho. Pochettino probably wouldn't have won those games. Yeah. Jose Mourinho is getting them over the line. Yeah.
Well, Dan was trying to convince me yesterday that they scored 5 against them and they scored 6 against them and they're so good. There you go, there's another one for you, Dan. He's just told you, Brighton completely outplayed them. But they won.
Yes, and don't you tell me every single week that that's all about winning titles. If you can go out and get 3 points without putting in your best performance, then you take it, you move on to the next weekend.
Not every time you step on... Listen, the fact that you threw in all these games that they won, what, 3 games by 3 or 4 goals, you're throwing that in as if that's the norm, and that's how they're going about it. It's not the norm for them. And do you think you can go and just sit tight like that and win the league? I don't think it's realistic.
Half of the games they've won have been by those margins, Stevie. Oh, we're going down all this road again.
Listen, if they beat Chelsea next if they beat Chelsea next weekend, we've all got to say they have to be contenders.
Well, Stevie may still not say it, though. Will you say it, Stevie? Because
I'll tell you
Mourinho.
What.
This is what this person's saying.
Hey, I've got... Listen, I've already said I think we'll finish the top four.
Right, OK.
I just don't think they'll win the Premier League. I mean, that you're making it out as if I'm saying they're complete rubbish and garbage. I'm not. I'm just saying that... I don't think you win the Premier League if you go and play like that the majority of the time, and that's what they do. Every now and again they ought not play, but it's every now and again. It's not the norm. It's the norm is sitting behind the ball and breaking. And we've been slaughtering United for 2 years, by the way, about that, because that's what they do. But all of a sudden, Spurs are fantastic and they're doing it.
Away from Stevie's hatred of Mourinho, is it officially a rebuilding year for Barca?
Yeah,
is a fourth place
that's
finish?
A lot of nonsense.
Is a fourth place finish in the works, Don? I don't think they're finishing Champions League, mate. I think they're out the top four.
I know, we got asked that question today by a pal of ours, didn't we? You don't think top four?
No.
Surely Barca get top four.
With who? They haven't got any defence.
Oh, but surely they're good enough to get top four.
I don't know, we haven't seen disaster
if they didn't.
Worst start to the season in 29 years. Can't even score at the other end at the moment.
I mean, I get all the problems. Like, I mean, they have got a million problems, but it still is Barcelona. And Koeman is, listen, I wouldn't say he's a great manager, but he's still a decent manager. With the players that he's got, with the likes of Coutinho and Messi and Dembele, Griezmann, surely they can get top four.
I don't know. I think they're in big trouble, aren't they? Stevie, would you like to chip in with this?
It's a little bit like City, isn't it? You're not going to turn around right now and say City are not making the top four, are you, Dan?
But
it's
I think it's
similar,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, but City haven't got the injuries.
Defensively.
Ansu Fati, Gerard Piqué, Sergio Roberto, big key players around. Manchester City don't have those sort of injuries, do they, at the moment?
No, but they can't defend regardless of no injuries.
No, but you can defend better with Piqué at the back.
But you still expect them to win games because of what they've got going forward.
I think they're going to struggle. I'll say no top four.
Ooh.
Ask Don if he thinks maybe all of us overrated Arteta. He seems like a Tony Pulis with good hair.
Oh, that's outrageous, isn't it? I mean, I've seen comparisons the other day that Unai Emery has got a better record than Mikel Arteta.
Oh.
Mikel Arteta's got 2 trophies in the bag. He's only been there 6 months.
Right.
He's got 2 trophies in the bag.
So Community Shield's a proper trophy now.
Well, I mean, it is if you win one. I mean, listen, he's won the FA Cup. I mean, listen, you go into a job that's had 6 months, 8 months. When you're like Stevie...
I didn't know Mourinho was on this show.
Leagues ...and a ridiculous amount of FA Cups, you throw the Community Shields away and you go, they don't count.
Right.
When you're Arteta and you've had the job for 6 months, you are claiming it's 2 trophies. They beat Liverpool, Man City, Chelsea. You could see what he was trying to do. He's going to need a couple of windows to buy defenders. He's got a ridiculous squad... in terms of how many. He's got close to 40 professionals.
Wow.
He needs a window to get shot of about 4 or 5 and start bringing in good defenders.
Don, who was tougher to play against? Roy Keane or Patrick Vieira?
Vieira.
Really?
Vieira, yeah. You stood alongside him in the tunnel and you thought, listen, he's taller, he's stronger, he's a better player, he's more athletic. Roy Keane was an unbelievable leader, fantastic player. When he was at... I think early on when he was at Forest and when he went to Man United, he was probably unplayable, Roy Keane. But when you're comparing the two and, you know, when they were sort of close to 28, 29, 30, I always thought I had more trouble with Vieira, even though Roy Keane is right up there in the conversation.
Stevie, what made you stay back at Liverpool when they were banned from European competitions, when a young player of your talent and defensive prowess could walk into any team?
Well, straight away, I would have had to move the broad. I think you may gather. It's not. I don't think I'm really suited to moving abroad.
No,
to be
shepherd's
quite honest
pie.
With you.
Well, it's shepherd's pie in Italy.
Correct.
Any sniffs from abroad?
Plus the fight,
any clubs come in for you?
No, not that I know of. No, the only team that ever came in was Rangers, Glasgow Rangers, when Souness was the manager that spoke to me. Other than that, I don't know any. But I was playing with, in my opinion, one of the best clubs in the world as it was. I was happy there. I saw my future there. I mean, it really never crossed my mind, to be perfectly honest. Never crossed my mind. And as I said, the opportunity, I don't believe, was there anyway.
Don, your thoughts on Alan Pardew? You played under Pardew, yeah, Don? Becoming the technical director of CSKA Sofia, and how quickly will he put himself in as manager?
It's only a matter of time, isn't it? I mean, he's only just finished his 8-year stint at Newcastle. I think that contract only finished like last season.
Wow.
Ridiculous. Remember when he signed the 8-year deal?
Yeah.
That only finished like last season, on the start of the season. Incredible. I mean, it's a bold move. Is it going to work? I've no idea. But
how did you get on with him, Don? Because you do hear different stories about Pardew.
Say again?
How did you get on with him? Because you hear differing stories about him.
We were really strange, me and Alan Pardew. We didn't get on and we jarred against each other as off the pitch manager stroke player. But what I would say about Alan Pardew is when he put sessions on and when he put coaching sessions on, very, very good sessions, enjoyable. It was always about midfield players scoring goals and centre forwards and wide players. Never worked on any sort of defensive shape whatsoever. That's why I can see when he had good results, he got good momentum. But when he lost a load, you know, his teams went on bad runs. But as friends, we were never, ever friends and never would be. But as a coach, I certainly thought he had really good sessions and put them on well.
Steve, Curtis Jones looked like a Rolls Royce, as Dan would say this weekend. Thoughts on the young lad?
Who?
Curtis Jones.
Well, I think the biggest compliment I can give him is that he played as though he'd been in Liverpool's side for the last 12 months. And he's only 19 years of age. I mean, listen, the sky's the limit. Previously, he scored goals in the League Cup and in the FA Cup. But, you know, for somebody of 19 to fit in to a team like Liverpool at the level they're playing and just do it so smoothly and so comfortably and look as though he's been there forever. I tell you, that tells you about this kid. So, yeah, if he stays free of injury, this guy's going to be fantastic.
Final question. It is, of course, Thanksgiving this week. What food would you serve at a Scottish Thanksgiving? Steve, you think Scotland, you think haggis, obviously.
We don't have Thanksgiving.
No, I know, but
we don't have Thanksgiving in Scotland.
I know that, and I'm sure the person who's asking that.
Well,
but if there was, your typical Scottish food would be haggis, yes?
I wouldn't eat haggis.
Listen, where did you get this typical? Do you think people in Scotland eat haggis everywhere all the time?
When you think
don't
Scotland, if we were to ask 100 people, name a Scottish food, they would say haggis, just because that's it, isn't it?
Well, that's because it's been drummed into them when they were kids. It's not to say they do it. That's like asking somebody out the moon, a question that's in the Moonies years ago. They just say what they were told to say.
Good, that's nice and relevant, Stevie. Do. When was the Moonies
what's
made?
What's a Scottish dish? it's haggis. I tell you what, if you asked 100 people when was the last time they had haggis, the majority would say,
right,
well, I don't actually eat it. I can't remember the last time I had it. And then you'd have like 25% that would say, oh, well, I had it on Burns night. And that's it.
Yeah, haggis. You've been told that, Dan.
No, but it's not unique. No, I'm saying is that's not unique to Scotland. For example, France, you might think, oh, snails. But, you know, I can't imagine that people eat snails every day in France. It's just different culinary stereotypes that you associate with each country. Hence, I went haggis. So let's develop this question a little further then. So if we were to have a Scottish Thanksgiving to show off, traditional Scottish food, Stephen, what would you serve?
In my house, shepherd's pie. It wouldn't be haggis.
You set yourself up there, Dan.
I know I did.
You set yourself up for that one.
I know I did. I know. Don, you're not even really Scottish, so that's not really...
Listen, you've got more chance of me eating snails than you have haggis.
Yeah?
No chance.
Right, so back
that's
to my...
That's a good decision, Don.
Back to the original point.
Just a steak and mash.
Steak and mash is your traditional Scottish fare?
Well done, steak, yeah, well done.
Well done, steak. This is great. Well done, steak.
And hold on. Oh, whoa. We don't call it mash in Scotland, by the way.
Oh.
It's tatties.
Tatties.
We don't say mash.
Yeah, but tatties are like roast potatoes, aren't they?
By the way, you don't have mashed tatties. You don't have mashed tatties with steak. You have chips with steak.
Oh, dear, Don.
Wow.
Homemade chips, not fries. Proper chips.
There you go. Anything else, Stevie? Shepherd's pie. What's for dessert traditionally in Scotland?
We know more about food than we do about football.
Well, that's not difficult. Stevie, dessert, what are you bringing?
Probably something with custard.
No, I don't bother with it.
Good.
I don't bother with dessert.
Just shepherd's pie. Starter, main, dessert, the whole shebang.
Just a mountain of
No. No starter. What do you want? What's this starter nonsense? Why would you waste your main meal by having a starter?
Right, okay. Well, you know, like, just the main mix it things up a little bit.
No.
He's not having it.
No.
He's
why?
Not having
that. That's it.
He's not
if
having,
you enjoy he's something.
Having, he's not having a prawn cocktail. He's not having.
Prawn cocktail.
He's not having. He's not having
we're going back to the 90s.
No. No.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. We'll be back tomorrow for more haggis talk. Until then, goodbye.
Don't go to Scotland then.